People who move to New York always make the same mistake. They can't see the place. This is true of Manhattan, but even the outer boroughs too, be it Flushing Meadows in Queens or Red Hook in Brooklyn. They come looking for magic, whether evil or good, and nothing will convince them it isn't here. This wasn't all bad, though. Some New Yorkers had learned how to make a living from this error in thinking. Charles Thomas Tester, for one.
That was author Victor Laval reading from his 2016 novella, The Ballad of Black Tom. Victor wrote the story as a way of responding directly to H.P. Lovecraft, a writer from the early 20th century, whose influence can still be detected throughout the fantasy and horror genres today.
I was about 11 the first time I started reading him, and one of like the central themes of his writing for me is about feeling small and powerless and sort of being enraged at the universe's indifference to your will. And that feels a lot like being 11 years old. And so there was a way that I felt like really connected to the characters he was writing about, except of course they were grown men acting that way and I was 11.
But once Victor got older, he discovered a much more troubling side of Lovecraft.
At around 15 or 16, though, when I reread these stories that I had devoured without any sort of critical lens, I suddenly noticed all these ways that he would just outright say racist and anti-Semitic things, and I was just shocked at what I hadn't seen when I was younger or what I'd glossed over when I was a kid. But in my teenage years, it was no longer possible to sort of just overlook that stuff.
Today, Lovecraft's bigotry is well documented, which has inspired a new generation of fantasy and horror writers to grapple with that legacy in their own fiction.
I first read Lovecraft when I was a teenager, and I just quite loved it. I had read Edgar Allan Poe, so he was the second horror writer that I read, and was one of the writers that got me both into horror and to the early pulp fiction of the what we would call the weird masters. So he was kind of like a gateway drug.
That's Silvia Moreno-Garcia, another author who has re-examined Lovecraft in her work. This weekend, the series Lovecraft Country premieres on HBO, and it's based on a book by writer Matt Ruff, which takes place in the Jim Crow South and combines Lovecraftian horror with the actual terrors of racism. Ahead of the show's release, I spoke with Victor and Silvia to get a sense of why so many writers, particularly writers of color, are engaging with Lovecraft today. And Silvia started off by explaining how she first learned about Lovecraft's racism.
Later on in my late teens, I started reading not just his stories, but kind of his biographical work that had been done on him and his letters, because he had a vast network of correspondence. And so it's one thing to read his stories, and some of them don't have racial stuff that sticks out very clearly. Some of them do. But if you read, for example, The Color Out of Space, well, that's just a color. Out of space and that kind of stuff. So some of them don't have things that you can see very clearly. Others have more explicit stuff. But when you read some of his letters are very funny and very friendly. Like he likes ice cream a lot. And then you get to the parts where he's talking to Robert E. Howard and he's talking about kind of like superior and inferior races. And that's when you realize like, oh, okay, well, that explains some things that you read maybe in the stories and that you didn't quite get. But I didn't quite get a lot of things in the beginning. And for example, I was pretty surprised that it wasn't until I was doing my thesis, I think because of the translation that I read in Spanish, when I was doing my thesis in my 30s about Lovecraft, I realized that a character in the Dunwich Horror is described as black, as the black brat, Labini's black brat. And it's a Rosemary's Baby kind of story, where in the end, the paternity of this person turns out to be half supernatural, half human. But I had never clued on to the fact that this child is described as swarthy, as black, that it is probably a metaphor for a mixed race African-American child. And I didn't realize that when I first read it. I think maybe it was a translation. I think it might have been translated as Moreno, which is my last name, as, you know, brown instead of black. But yeah, when I read it again in English, I was like, okay, I missed that one.
Victor, in 2016, you published a novella called The Ballad of Black Tom, which is directly based on a Lovecraft story called The Horror at Red Hook. Why that story in particular? Why did you choose to reimagine Lovecraft in that way?
Well, there were two reasons for using that story. And the first is that most of Lovecraft's stories take place in New England. And I'm a kid from Queens, New York. I don't know anything about New England. And so I didn't feel like I could challenge him as a writer on his home turf. But The Horror at Red Hook takes place in Red Hook, Brooklyn. And if you read it, you can tell he doesn't know a thing about New York or a thing about Brooklyn beyond maybe some street names. And so I felt like, okay, this is my territory. I think I have a little greater mastery about like the landscape and the people. And then the second reason is because it's probably his most overtly and extensively xenophobic story. It's anti everybody and every kind of immigrant, every kind of whatever you want to name that is not a white male Protestant. There's got to be a line in there denigrating that group. And so I really thought like, well, this is the one that is the sort of concentrated dose of Lovecraft's worst impulses. So this is the one I want to wrestle with.
Sylvia, you've edited anthologies of stories inspired by Lovecraft. I wonder if any of the writers of color that were contributing to these anthologies were even conflicted about contributing to an anthology inspired by Lovecraft, who, you know, as we said, was xenophobic and had other issues.
There were a few people who, when I asked them, they were concerned, like, as in, well, does my story have to place Lovecraft, or does it have to be a Lovecraft pastiche? And my answer always was, no, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be. And when you think about something like Shakespeare, we have multiple adaptations and retakes of Hamlet. And nobody believes, oh, well, we have to do it exactly like Shakespeare did. So it was the same idea. I would just tell them, Lovecraft is a launching point. Would you might be interested in that? And then most people, or I think everybody actually said, yeah, I would like to do that. And they went in wildly different directions. Some were using queer characters, some were using characters of color, some were doing things that were funny, comedic, which Lovecraft wouldn't have done, and some were going in very bleak places and very serious explorations of race and history and womanhood and sexism and all these kinds of things. So it was just this Lovecraft. The good thing about Lovecraft's mythos and Lovecraft's fiction is that it has been for many, many decades. It's like a Lego kit. You know, you can grab the Lego blocks and you can build a spaceship, but somebody else can build a castle.
I have a question for both of you. Why even bother trying to find inspiration from Lovecraft today rather than just leaving him behind entirely and allowing people, you know, and just creating your own stories without any contact with Lovecraft? I mean, is he that critical to the genre, or just curious? Sylvia.
Literature is a conversation between authors and between books. And there's just some people that keep getting our attention for some reason or another. There's something that they said there that still speaks to us. And I think Lovecraft, unlike other writers who have been forgotten of the time period, really does say things that jive with our modern experience. Not only, you know, the questions about living in a world that is phantomless and unforgiving and where your life might have no meaning, but also the fact that some of his stories are peppered with issues of race, I think is why we keep looking at him, because he is one of the writers that actually has that baked into the story, and we can actually use those blocks to build something new. You can't do that with other writers so easily.
Victor, what about you? Why even bother using Lovecraft as a starting point or an inspiration? Why not just, you know, create things without having to refer back to him?
I guess I would think of, I often think of literature as a kind of an enormous family, right? The books you read when you're young, the books that influence you, the artists that influence you, they get into your DNA. They become a part of your sort of way of thinking and seeing the world. And as a result, they influence who you are in the same way that they were influenced. I would echo Sylvia that Lovecraft didn't invent the genre of cosmic horror. There are artists that were inspiring him, like Algernon Blackwood, Arthur Machen, whose work is still read, but he added to that genre. And to my mind, the worst thing would be to say, that kind of writing or that genre, it's only for white dudes. Because when I was growing up, I said, I love this. I knew lots of writers of color, lots of women, who also love this. And so the idea that we would have to give up a whole sort of geography simply because someone who was a big part of it was a problem, I mean, I feel like then you'd have to talk about realism and Herman Melville. You'd have to talk about almost every single genre. Some of the writers who are foundational were also awful people. And so the question is, do we give up everything, or do we find a way to revitalize it, regenerate it, and perhaps make something good out of some land that was at times a little bit poisoned or a little bit fallow? Let's say it that way.
Sylvia, wanted to ask you about this summer's Hugo Awards, which honor science fiction and fantasy writing, where Lovecraft got a retroactive award. What did you make of the decision to do that?
I think all the retro awards are ridiculous. Why do we care what somebody did, 80 years ago when they were extremely famous, as in the case of H.P. Lovecraft? It's not adding anything to recognize him at this point. I mean, he is dead. Shouldn't we be looking at other people who are alive and well and maybe didn't get as much attention? I mean, I remember when Charles Saunders wrote what is a rip-roaring African sword and sorcery in the 1970s and 80s, and it kind of was not very well known, that those are the kind of people that I would like to see and getting awards. I mean, there's like board games inspired by Lovecraft's work. There's a film festival. Why does he need that award? And of course, this coming after they changed the World Fantasy Award from being a Lovecraft head, a Howie, to something else, it just feels really quite pointless. And if we are going to be doing that kind of looking into the past and giving awards like that, we should be doing it, to more interesting people that were forgotten.
Wondering, Victor, if you can recommend any sci-fi or fantasy writers today who are tackling things like racism and sexism in their work. Is there anyone you would recommend?
Yeah, for sure. There's a few. There's a writer named Ruthanna Emrys, has a series of books that starts with a novel called Wintertide that talks about Lovecraft stuff, particularly from the point of view of women in the Lovecraftian sort of fictional world. There's a writer named Cassandra Caw, who has a novel called Hammers on Bone. And then a writer named Caitlin Kiernan, who has a novel called Agents of Dreamland. All three of them are excellent writers and wrote excellent books in this sort of vein.
Sylvia, are there any sci-fi or fantasy writers today that you would want to recommend?
Stephen Graham Jones just released The Only Good Indians. I think it is an excellent novel that has all the flavor of Stephen King, it, or Peter Straub's Ghost Story, but it feels fresh and exciting. I also read a book in translation recently that is called Tender is the Flesh. It's a dystopia in which human beings are being farmed for meat consumption. So those are just two horror books that have come out recently that I think are very exciting. And there's always interesting work going on in the magazines, in the small presses. Nadia Balkin's collection, She Said Destroy, is just amazing. And there's all kinds of stuff that is happening that I think if you like horror, we are, I hope, kind of entering a sort of renaissance after it being kind of dry out there, where horror wasn't getting as much attention in the literary sphere, and you would be told, well, don't write horror, it'll never sell. I think we're finally heading into an era in which that might not be true anymore.
Don't write horror, it'll never sell if you're not Stephen King, or don't write horror, it'll never sell because people aren't interested?
Well, I was told don't write anything set in Mexico because nobody will read anything in Mexico. So if you want to get more specific about my situation, that was mine. But in general, I was also told that horror is not something that agents or editors would like. And it is true. It's one of those things that you don't see agents kind of running out and begging you for horror books. There were other things that they might want, like epic fantasy was kind of the big thing patented after George R. R. Martin and Game of Thrones. That was kind of like the hot stuff that people were kind of asking. And if you said, well, I've got a horror book, it's like, okay. And then if I said it's set in Mexico, then they were just like, well, no, that's Definitely no.
I suspect that might be starting to change, Sylvia.
Well, I wrote a book called Mexican Gothic, and it's a New York Times bestseller, so I just thought that'll show them.
Victor Laval is the author of The Changeling, and Sylvia Moreno Garcia is the author of Mexican Gothic. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.